Awesome. We are live now, so I'm going to invite our speaker to the stage. Afia, you should get a notification. There we go. So for anybody who's watching the replay, if you are watching this in the Facebook group, then great, you're already a part of the Facebook group. But if you are not watching this in the Podcasters Connections Facebook group, you can get all the information on where these events happen in that page or group, rather. Just search Podcasters Connections on Facebook and you will be added to that group. Do make sure that you answer the actual questions when you're coming into the group, so I know you're not a spammer and you're actually a podcaster. So with that, we are going to jump in with the introductions here. If you are with us live, then go ahead and put in the chat where you're coming in from and the name of your podcast and get a feel for who's here. If you haven't ran into me yet, my name is Jace Kraft. I am the founder of Perfect My Podcast. I host How to Make Money Podcasting Podcast and The Science of Sports Recovery. So that's kind of my thing. I do full scale production for podcasting as well. But our featured guest and kind of the main show, the main attraction, the reason you're here is not me, it's Afia. She is a licensed lawyer currently, and she is going to talk to us about copyright laws. She has a background in publications and production, and is going to talk to us about what you should watch out for and what you could potentially get dinged on from the law, depending on when if you get big. I know sometimes this is thought of like not as important when you're small, because like who pays attention to you anyways, but if as you grow, this is going to be something that obviously you want to pay attention to. You do want to pay attention to it when you're small. I'm not saying that you don't. It's just often forgot because breaking the law one way or another is breaking the law. So we do have Zachariah here from Little Ferry, New Jersey, embarking on starting a podcast within a month. So excited for you there, Zachariah. Now, Afia, would you want to do just a brief introduction on kind of your credentials, your background, that kind of stuff, and then we'll get into the topic here.
Right. So I have pursued my law both in India and the United States, and thereafter I started working as an associate with law firms. And then I realized that I gradually eventually want to move from practicing or even assisting litigating lawyers into actually, into the media industry and into journalism. So that's when I started my own digital media publication. And that's exactly where I work right now. So I'm the CEO of Current Affairs Times. Now, having said that, obviously, as a journalist, I'm not practicing. But at the same time, since I have my legal background, that helps me run my digital publication, and that kind of enables me to talk about copyright laws and how to implement them and what to watch out for. I think I've been doing this for almost 13 years now. 13? Yeah, 13. So I look forward to meeting all of you and addressing any questions that you might have after our sessions.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to get into it, but just a quick note, if you have questions as you think of them, please write them in the chat. Don't try to wait for the end because then you might forget them. And it will be important. It'll add value to you and to anybody watching the replay as well. So ask questions as you go. I'll kind of moderate them and make sure that we're at a good, interjection point to say them. And then if you do, we will leave questions at the end. And then if you are here with us live, at the end of the session, we will break out into the networking tables where we'll all be able to see each other face to face. And we can get to know each other on a more personal level after this. So with that, I guess, Afia, where do you want to start with the
You know, there's really a lot to talk about when it comes to copyrights, especially when it comes to music, broadcasting, performance, and copyright. Mm-hmm. But what I've done is I've really streamlined the topic into three broad categories. One is the basic rules of copyright, which applies almost on every platform. And then second is what can or can't you do? And the third is what is more safe and ideal? So let's begin with what a music copyright is. Now, a music copyright, whether it's musical work or sound recording, that the copyright gets created as soon as you create the product. Now, it's different that you need to register your product in order to be able to sue somebody in court, but that doesn't mean you don't have the copyrights for your product. So the moment you start creating it, you have the copyrights. You just need to basically get it registered in order to be able to compensate it if someone violates your rights. But it just starts the moment you create a file. Obviously, certain requirements, it must be original work of authorship. That means that there has to be basic element of creativity that is your own, that is original. Mm-hmm. So let's say in a song, a rhythm, or you know, a tune, that's not subject to copyrights, but a melody is. So if the melody is yours, then that's something which is original, for example.
Does that include words and like
we'll get to
audio?
That because we'll get to that. So if it's a commonly used term or a commonly used phrase that is actually in a public domain, then no. Because as long as you're using that phrase and you've obtained that from a legal source, for example, if it's not from, you know, an unauthorized website, then you're fine. Sure. But if it is something that's not widely used and only you created it, then in that case, it will be subject to copyright. But again, the distinction has to be very broad. For example, the difference between a melody and a rhythm. Rhythm, you'll see that many songs, they have the rhythm is similar. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the melody is different. The instruments used are different. Also, it has to be fixed. It has to be in a tangible medium. For example, it has to be on a written music sheet or an MIDI file or a digital recording. And that includes the podcasts. You cannot obtain copyrights for something if let's say you and I were on a Zoom meeting, that's not a podcast. Mm-hmm. It has to be in a digitally recorded format for you to be able to get copyrights on that. Now, remember that it's not necessary for you to publish your work. As long as you register your work, you don't have to publish it. You can still sue somebody for using your work, even if it's not published, nobody knows about it, as long as you actually went to the U.S. Copyrights Office website and you registered your work. Sure. So on and off, people think that, oh, this stuff was never published, so you know what, I can still use it. Now, you still have to double check with the U.S. Copyrights Office, and it's a simple process. Many people think that it's very complicated. It's not. You know, you just go online and you can run a search and find out if that particular tune, that particular topic, those particular words are copyrighted in any way or form.
How would you search a tune? Like, I get searching words, but...
Well, so there's a special request form that they have at the U.S. Copyrights Office. And what you can do is you can basically send them a tune or a melody, and they can, that takes a little bit more time than lyrics, gotcha. But they come back to you and then they tell you that, okay, you know what, you can or cannot use this, or this sounds similar to something that we have already on file. So again, that might probably take you a day, for example, maybe two in the middle of COVID, but it's not, it's not something that takes forever and that's not achievable, for example. And it's not even costly. Usually searches are free and permits are super cheap. And I'll get to that eventually.
Okay. We do have a question here from Zachariah. And you might be answering this in a little bit, but he's just wondering what the exact process is for registering your work.
Yes, I can send you guys a link. But if anybody just simply Googles U.S. Copyrights Office and then just register, they have a section where you can actually register your product. And then they have subsections depending on what you want to obtain copyrights on. Like Patents, for example, they're super difficult to obtain, but copyrights, it's a very simple process, and I will provide the link towards the end of the call.
Gotcha.
So let's talk a little bit about what original means. Now, original does not necessarily mean that the work was independently created. What it means is that there's some sense of creativity that is original. Now, for example, if we're talking about, let's say, a call like today, and we discuss something that, you know, Zachariah, for example, he comes up with an idea that's pretty original, and we discuss and talk about it, and that's not really something which is common. Since he's created that product, the copyright originates right there and then. Of course, he's not registered it, so he might have difficulty in suing somebody if they repeat it or use it or, you know, sort of misuse it in any way or form. But that doesn't mean his rights don't exist or that that's not his original work. But of course, if it's something that, Elon Musk said something in an interview, but I really think that this is what he meant, that's not original. I'm just simply interpreting what somebody is saying. And a lot of times in the middle of podcasts, that's what we do. We talk about a concept that somebody else came up with, and we're just basically criticizing it or interpreting it. And that's not something that you can get copyrights on.
Sure. So just hang on there a second. So in that example, because this happens a lot, you can say Elon Musk said, and then quote him and then talk about it. Right.
And there are, and yes and no, because whatever, let's say, Elon Musk said, that's in a public domain. And if it's something which is in a public domain that you can share, easy, go ahead and do it. You won't be sued for that. But if it is not in a public domain, now let's say, now here, right here, we're sitting here and having a conversation. So now that's not in a public domain. For that, what you have to do is, I don't necessarily need to obtain permission from you or from Zachariah for that. But what I do need to do is go back to the U.S. Copyrights Office and obtain something which is called a permit. So, for example, a lot of times on YouTube, you see people playing cover songs, you know, they're playing songs and those are essentially covers. What do? They pay 91 cents to the U.S. Copyrights Office, go online and obtain something which is called a permit. So that's why, you know, it's very, that's why I said it's very streamlined and it's very easy. And I suggest that people do that rather than not, because sure, there are exceptions on when you don't need to obtain that kind of permit, but it's just very easy to do it. So if somebody had to, let's say, replicate what you and I said right here, it's easy for them to just go to the copyrights office, just obtain a permit, and then just give credits on their video, instead of not doing it and simply giving credits to the person without sort of obtaining their individual permission.
Okay. What if you're using like some sort of audio file? So like Elon... let's just stay with Elon because he's very boisterous. Post something on YouTube and you want some of that audio on your podcast so then you can talk about it. Is it the same process?
Absolutely, it is. Unless they've put it under a domain which is called public domain. So when you register your copyrights, for example, like let's say we were registering today's session online, you have the option of making it something that's available in public domain and something that where special permission would be required to like sort of use that. So that you will do when you register your product, your video, your material online. And when, let's say, if I have to go there and get a permit, I'll see, this is something which is in public domain. So then I don't need to sort of get the permit. And now to make the fact that this is in public domain more popular, what'll I do? I'll go on social media and post, hey, you know what? I've used this on my video because it's a part of a public domain. So then 10 other users would know that, you know, this is a part of a public domain. And since somebody like Elon Musk is so popular, you don't really want to spend the time in going back and checking, is this really, you know, a part of a public domain, you would rather know. But yeah. if it's somebody who's not very popular, let's say people, a lot of people talk about human rights. There's a lot of poetry, for example, motivational speakers, TEDx speakers, for example. A lot of them, they have videos where, you know, they're not as popular as Elon Musk. So you don't know whether their videos are a part of a public domain or not. So that's when you really want to go in and run that search on the U.S. Copyright Office website and then just see if you need to obtain a permission or you can just sort of go ahead and use those lines.
Okay. So we got another question here. Sure. When registering a podcast, is it safe to assume a single registration for the entire podcast covers all episodes, or do you need to register each individual episode of a podcast?
So you don't need to register each individual episode, but there are finer points within that topic, and I guess that's a good question because that exactly was what my next, you know,
perfect
point was going to be about. So for example, in a song, sound recording and performance and composition, those are three different things. So you have a different set of copyrights for the composition in itself, and you have a different set of copyrights that you need to obtain on the sound recording. Now that's the same with a podcast. You have a different set of copyrights that you need on the subject, on the matter. And you have a different set of copyrights that you need in terms of any kind of engineering or recording. And that's also because you want to protect the rights of the different people that are involved in making your podcast happen. So, for example, lately with everything being very digital, you have a lot of people doing the compositions and then the recording and engineering at the same time and then the same person doing both. But in the olden days, very recently, actually, it was done by different people because you actually went to a studio to record something. So the sound engineer's set of copyrights would be different. And then the person who's talking about something, his copyrights would be different. So essentially what it means is that you don't need to get a copyright on every episode, but you do need to see what part of the content requires a separate kind of copyright, if that makes sense. So like, for example, right here in this episode, I'm the one who's speaking, but Hayes, you're the one who's recording it. So if we were to actually copyright this episode, it your copyrights would be separate and mine would be separate. So if somebody had to like utilize what I said, that, you know, the permissions for that would be different. But if somebody had to, let's say, copy a platform that you created, that the copyrights for that is different. So every episode you would be having different speakers, you would be quoting different people, you would be using different content and material. So in that sense, it's very important to note that the composition and the sound recording is different. And that applies to even a podcast. Your content and your composition or content and your recording part of it, the technology aspect of it is different.
Gotcha.
So, okay. So usually what the courts have done in the past is they've tried to create a balance between producers, engineers, and hosts. And they've tried to equally blend the rights of each one of them. And now what that means is that most of the times, if let's say I had to share this podcast, I would require your permission. Even though my material, the content and material is mine, but if I had to really say that, hey, you know, I spoke about this on a show, I need your permission to actually share that. But at the same time, can I use the subject material everywhere? Sure, I can, unless you and I have had an agreement that, hey, Afia, you're not going to speak about this anywhere else, and this is just, you know, something that you're going to speak with me about. And the courts take that really seriously. Most of the times what happens is that when people are subject to a copyright infringement lawsuit, what they don't realize is that themes, ideas, which are very abstract, are not protected by copyrights, but solid content is. So it's very important to make that.
Okay. Distinction. Could you give an example of that distinction?
Sure. Let's look at the word. You asked me this question that, you know, what about portions of a lyrics if you use that, in a podcast? So let's say you guys must have heard that the term "every day I'm shuffling," it's a song, right? And everybody uses it, literally everybody. Now that's perfect example of an abstract theme that you don't have copyrights on, you know, like if I use the word "every day I'm shuffling," it's so common, it's definitely a part of a public domain, and it's definitely very abstract because I'm not trying to copy that song. I'm just using that term in a broader perspective. So there I'm not violating any rights, nobody's rights. Okay. But if, let's say, I use the tune and I use the song and I'm playing that in the middle of a presentation to prove a point, there I'm violating somebody's copyrights. I may be subject to an infringement lawsuit. Okay. And this is something which is really called a 50 cent rule. So if anyone Googles a 50 cent rule, they'll understand what this means. That, you know, if it's a common phrase and you're just using it in the middle of a talk session, you can absolutely do that. But if you're using that phrase from a pre-recorded session and you're using that in the middle of your presentation, you can't do that. You really can't do that. Also, that...
And it doesn't matter length?
Doesn't matter the length.
Okay.
No, not at all.
I know sometimes that's a common, like, I don't know, people throw out, if it's 15 seconds or less, you're okay. And...
Well, and it's just, it's weird that people say that because most of the times the quantum of what you've used is so important because 50 seconds or less, but in 50 seconds you can like read out an entire paragraph. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, that like it's a complex issue in general, but it just depends on whether it's really a part of a public domain or not, you know, and also whether it's original or not. So like... Maybe in another 100 years, nobody would know who the hell said "every day I'm shuffling."
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't really matter. But there's also another thing that applies out here is that copyrights are beyond somebody's life. So for example, if let's say I have the copyrights to something and I die, my copyrights exist for 70 years after my death. And after that, it's open. So Beethoven, for example, you know, Beethoven's rhythms, tunes, whatever, Beethoven, anybody can use it. But let's say if I am a part of an orchestra and I'm using a particular, you know, a particular theme from a popular musician, popular instrumentalist, I can do that. And then I can get copyrights on that. And then somebody else cannot do it because I've created an orchestra group and I have basically copyrighted what I presented in a platform.
Gotcha.
So having said that, performances are also copyrightable.
Okay.
So it's not just the composition, you can copyright your performance too.
Yeah.
So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So the 50 cent rule essentially applies everywhere. But it's also very complex. It really depends on what you're using, whether that's a part of a public domain, how much of it you're using, and was your intention really to copy that term and use it in a presentation, or was it just in the context of something else that you were saying?
Okay.
Obviously, once again, the medium of expression has to be tangible. A lot of times people don't really understand that it has to be something that is recorded in a digital format or an actual performance. You cannot say, oh, I sat in my room and I sang a song and that's and I did nothing about it. I did not record it, but this is my tune. Like, you can't do that. You have to actually record it somewhere to make sure that you can, and a lot of false claims are, in fact, I used to take this as a joke, but if you go back and look at the lawsuits, a lot of false claims are randomly generated. Hey, you know what? This was something I thought of, but you didn't record it. Oh, I thought of, and I told you that this was mine, but you didn't, again, you did not record it. It's not tangible. So it doesn't matter that you told me something. So make sure that if there is anything creative that you're doing, you're making it tangible if you really need yourself to be credited for that.
Gotcha.
All right. So what are some of the rights that you establish or you have when you own a copyright? The very first thing is to reproduce the work. And what that means is there are different kind of permissions that I can obtain. So if, let's say, I obtain the permission to play a cover song on YouTube and pay 91 cents, that's basically my permission to reproduce the work. Now, that's my right. Obviously, like, as long as the original person has published it, you have the ability to obtain that right to reproduce the work, and you don't need that person's direct permission for that. The United States makes it very flexible. All you do is go to their online website, pay the money, and just obtain the permission. And if the government officers think that you don't qualify for the permission or that there's something, some reason behind why they should deny your request, then it's up to them, not the creator. Gotcha. You know, if I, as a creator, want to object to anybody using my work, I have to inform the authorities of that when I'm trying to get my product registered. Mm.
So let's say we want to use a song as a part of our podcast. Mm-hmm. I would assume most songs are copyrighted just because the industry, whereas I don't think people are probably copywriting their podcasts as much. Mm-hmm. But if I wanted to have that song, I go to that website, pay 91 cents, and then can I download it right from there? Or do I
once
have
you
to
get the certification, which usually for smaller you know, stuff, like I said, like playing a cover or just using it in a podcast, it's usually immediate. But you do need to get that certificate, and then you do need to provide credits to the original publisher.
Gotcha. But there's like a button or something, or yeah, an email that you get just basically to download
go
it.
To the Yeah, you just basically go to the U.S. Copyrights Office, create an account, search for what it is that you need. They have different tabs, and then you just make the payment and get the certificate. And also, when you make the payment, there are going to be a couple of questions that you're going to have to fill out. Like, it's a questionnaire that you would have to fill out. What is it that you need to do? What is it that you need to, why do you need to reproduce the work? It's like, you know, when you register for a TEDx event, for example, they ask you a ton of questions and you fill that out. In most cases, it's instant. In some cases, if, you know, there's a red flag of some kind, then they'll basically, let's say you were producing a movie and you needed to use a song on multiple occasions in that movie. Or you're creating a social awareness documentary where a lot of copyright issues arise because you're talking about, you know, stuff that can actually, stuff like, you know, let's say your discussion is about politics and you're making a documentary on a certain politician and you want to use a lot of themes, songs, products from that person's life. Mm-hmm. If that can instigate anybody, they might want to evaluate things further and then, you know, subject your application to a further review. But in most cases, that's not really the case.
And it would be the same, like if you're doing, I know there's like TV show podcasts. Absolutely. That, like, you know, you're going to talk about this one episode, you want clips from that episode.
Right.
You could find that on this U.S. copyright website and download Absolutely. The audio and stuff.
And one interesting thing out there is, just for example, this very episode that we're recording, your copyright starts now while you're recording this episode. The only thing is that you've not registered it. So if someone basically uses a clip from this session, let's say records it and posts and publishes it somewhere, somebody other than you, you basically maybe can hold, like, maybe the process of taking that person to court is delayed because you've not registered the work. Doesn't mean what that person did is not copyright infringement.
Gotcha. So if I hadn't, say somebody, you know, is just blown away by this conversation, they're like, I want this to take home and show to my mom. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but I haven't registered it. How would they find that or obtain, like, a copyright permit for it?
So, like, obtaining a permit, like I said, is easy. It's just an online process. Go online and do it. But how would you find out that somebody's used it? That's the complex part. So usually if somebody's not published it.
So I guess I'm asking, like, If I saw like a YouTube video, per se, and I wanted permission to use that, is like, is any YouTube video going to be on that site to find, or does somebody have to register it on that site for then you to obtain the permit?
Yeah, somebody, you have to register on that site to obtain the permit. You cannot go anywhere else to obtain the permit as well. I guess that's what you're asking, right? Like,
no, I'm asking if, like, what if the permit isn't there, or the U.S. like copyright site?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if the copyright I'm looking for isn't there?
Well, that's the thing. That means the person hasn't registered their copyright, and you know that. So you're, let's say, just using the material or the video. Technically, you're still infringing the person's copyrights, because that person's copyright got created when the person created the product. But the loophole here is that that person cannot sue you until they've gone back and registered their product.
Gotcha. So then, if they're going to like sue you and they say, hey, I'm going to sue you, you'd be like, register, and then I'll just get the permit.
No, you can't do that. If they've officially notified you that they'll sue you and you're getting the permit after that, that's also, that is, you can be sued for that. So, gotcha. so it's a very niche concept. Just, yeah. Let me give you an example. If I, let's say, use this video clip somewhere else without your permission, mm-hmm. and I said, hey, you know what? You haven't registered it, so I used it anyway. You say, hey, Afia, this is, it's my copyright started the moment we were recording. So I say, okay, register it, and then we'll see. And then you go ahead and register it, and then you can still sue me from a back date, because your copyright originated the day you started producing this stuff. It's just that until it's registered, you cannot sue me. And the problem is this, that I cannot go back and say, hey, I obtained the permit to do this. No, you did not, because when I used it, I did not give you the credits, if that makes sense.
So if there's no, like if I haven't registered it and you wanted to use it, you would just have to contact me then and say, hey, can you register this so I could use it? Got it.
Yes. And also, let's say if I contact you and say, hey, I'm using it, do you mind if I use it? A lot of people do that. They don't really like go through the permit, and they just say like, hey, can I use it? But in due course of time, please register it. Then you cannot go back and tell me, hey, I'm suing this person for using it, until and unless you've again registered the product.
Gotcha.
So essentially, a lot of times people don't obtain a permit and they just basically ask the person, hey, can I use it? Mm-hmm. Then when the person grants the permission, then they're also basically saying that, hey, I'm not going to sue you in the future.
Okay. And if you have that in writing, would that protect you then?
Right. Well, it doesn't really protect you at all times, but what it does is that it makes your case stronger, because you go like, okay, I didn't follow 10 procedures, but I did pretty much, you know, follow one rule of ethic. So basically the amount of compensation that you would get, it just obviously becomes much lower, because you failed to do something that you should have done also.
Okay.
So it's like a two-way street. Both parties need to do what they got to do.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And also accessibility is a big question. Like, I know you, so I can ask you something, but am I always using any of your, any of your compositions? No, I'm not. I'm most probably going to use somebody else's composition, and that somebody else is probably someone I'm not in touch with. Most of the times, in most cases, copyright violations happen where people really don't know each other as much.
Yeah.
And even if they, or maybe they do know each other and there's nothing in writing. But in most cases, it's where, okay, I don't know this person. I'm a university professor. I used another university professor's stuff, research thesis, for example. Mm-hmm. So that becomes important. So some of the other rights include performance. So once you've obtained the permit, you can reproduce, let's say you obtain the permit to use a music composition in one of your presentations. you can use that composition. You can also perform it. The permits are standard. They don't just basically limit how you can use it. You can display it. You can distribute it as long as you're giving credits to the person. You can incorporate the work and add visual images to it, for example. Like, let's say I use somebody else's musical composition and then I just basically added my own images to it. A lot of people do that for personalized gifts, for example. You mm-hmm. put on a song and then you put on a video, personal video, and then you get that as a gift to a family member, for example. Most of the times, these songs are in a public domain, so you don't need to get a permit. But once you do get a permit, it's pretty standard. You can use it for like multiple purposes. And the one interesting thing, which has also been a subject of a lot of debate, is when you get a permit for a song or a composition or a performance or a product, do you have the ability to give the others the license to use it? In many countries, you don't, but in the US, you do. And there have been plenty of lawsuits about that because most people don't like that concept because okay. the permit is only for you. So you don't have, you should not have the authority to sort of transmit it to the others. But then again, it's also very subjective. There are people who work for the same company, for example. Mm-hmm. And so if you as an employer are authorizing your employee to use it, are you obtaining the permit just for yourself or for all of them? So it's a very complex issue, but it's a very important issue. But what is to be noted is that in the US, you can actually transmit the permits. So if you obtain a permit and let's say I say, hey, you know what, I need to use this. In writing, you can give me the license to use your permit.
Gotcha. So if you have a podcast production company, mm-hmm. You can say, hey, this copyright for this music or this episode of, you know, another show, I can use for the whole company.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Okay. Or you can say that, hey, I obtained the permit. This is my permit certificate. I obtained that from the US Copyrights website. And then, you know, now I'm just, let's say, authorizing a FIA to use my permit in writing. So it's yeah. basically assigning your certificate to somebody else. And that's allowed in the US.
Gotcha. Awesome.
And okay. that's how a lot of times people don't really obtain permits. They just basically, it's a rolling thing. Okay, I got the permit, I give it to someone else. They give it to someone else, and it just moves on from there.
Gotcha.
All right, so now comes the important part where we talk about what are the things that you should or should not do. Let's say for those who want to perform a cover version of a song, obviously what you have to obtain what is called mechanical rights. Okay. And mechanical rights, basically, they're compulsory. So what I was talking about in the beginning is that you don't need the permission of the original license holder. All you need to do is pay the license fee, which is a certain percentage, and go online, pay that fee, get the permit, and basically move on with your work. That's what is called obtaining mechanical rights. So okay. when you go on the US Copyrights website, what you need to really search for is not the word permit or permission. You need to search for the word called mechanical rights, like purchase mechanical rights, and then click on the right subsections that would apply to why you need those mechanical rights. And usually the US Copyrights Office, they have different prices, different rates, but there are many private organizations that you can go through to obtain these licenses also. They function as brokers, basically. It's just like, you know, how if you were to incorporate a company, for example, you can do that directly through the IRS, and it's not yeah. a you can do that directly through the Secretary of State, and it's not yeah. a complicated process, but there are companies like LegalZoom, they function as brokers, and then they charge a fee and do it for you. So for copyrights, a lot of people actually go through these agencies, and one such agency is Harry Fox. Harry Fox is a very, very popular online agency, and a lot of people really use those only because sometimes they have a lot of questions and they don't really have the money or the ability or to hire an attorney. Yeah. So Harry Fox basically does everything for them, including, like, you know, making sure that everything is filed correctly. So, you know, you can pay an agency fee and go through them, or you can do your own thing. Now, what is important is that mechanical licenses, now this was something actually I should have said it earlier, but we'll talk about it now. These mechanical licenses don't apply to sound recording and engineering. Now, that's where you remember you were saying that, hey, so can I use a composition directly or, you know, a song directly? Well, yeah, but if you're really copying something which is more of a part of engineering, then there is a separate kind of permit that you need to obtain for that. And that's not a mechanical permit. It's a non-mechanical permit. Costs a little bit more. And also, the questions that you would have to answer are a little bit more complex. Like, why do you need that? Why do you need to replicate this? What? Because most of the times, what you need is a composition as a whole, a melody, you know, lyrics, a general composition. You don't need anything that is associated with sound recording. But lately, what's happening is that a lot of podcasters are doing the engineering part of it also themselves. Just because you have so many software, so many apps, so much that you can use. For example, I think you do your own sound engineering. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, but you do.
My team does.
Yeah, then if somebody had to use anything that is associated with that, the mechanical licenses won't apply there. You have to apply for a separate kind of license. And also the damages for somebody actually using anything that's associated with sound recording, sound engineering, or any kind of engineering is a lot more than just a generic composition or just random lyrics or anything that's more available and more public, because the engineering portion of it is never public. You don't share your techniques broadly on social media, for example. Mm-hmm. So, like, I remember we had a show on how to market your podcast, I believe, and then how to host a podcast show. So, for example, if you were hosting something on podcast production and you were sharing details, teaching somebody on how to do the engineering, that episode, if someone had to replicate it on their presentation, they would have to follow a lot more rules and get something which is called a non-mechanical license.
Okay.
Again, not a very complicated process. You can get it online, just obviously the number of questions and the requirement to actually do it is a lot more stringent. So you don't want an infringement lawsuit over there. And it's a little bit different. Uh-huh. Sorry.
I was just going to say, we're going to try to wrap up here in a couple minutes so we can make sure we have some networking time too. If you do have any questions, now is the time to ask them. Otherwise, we'll kind of wrap up with trying to maybe summarize what we've covered so far and then just some key takeaways.
Yep. And I guess there was one last thing that could be important, and I can share material on that, is the concept of fair use, which is kind of what you were saying. Okay, what am I using it for? And that it's very important that as long as you're using it for a non-commercial purpose, let's say you did not obtain permission and you infringed somebody's copyrights, you know, you really did violate something. What are your defenses? One of the main defenses would be fair use, that you used it for social justice, that you used it for a not-for-profit cause, that, you know, it was a fair use, or it was simply a commentary or a criticism and you were not really trying to copy somebody else's work. Also, you did not use a major portion of that person's work, which is where, the 50-second rule applies. So if you can prove some of those things, it's easy to use the concept of fair use, but I would say don't do it because obtaining a permit is not a very difficult task.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Cool.
I think that was pretty much it.
All right. Any questions for Afia before we break out into our networking groups? You covered a lot of mine, so I've... My knowledge in copyright went from, you know, very like dirt poor to at least I have some money in the bank now. So
I'm glad I could help. Right. And I think, did Nicholas have a question? Michelle Wells, did she have a question?
No, she was just commenting. I put together or I searched that site that you were talking about and put it in there. So there's that. All right. Well, seeing no other questions, Seeing no other questions, I'm going to go ahead and end this session. And then what you guys will see once we end this session, there's I think we'll all fit on one table, so we can all go to table number one on the networking session. You'll just see kind of a screen with table looking digital things. Just click a seat that's open there and you'll be added to that, and we can see and talk.
I don't know if somebody asked a question.
We do have one last second question here. Kiwi asks, any other social permits other than mechanical?
Yeah, that's not an easy question to answer, but there are a lot of them. Like I said, if it's sound engineering is another kind of permit. If, like, let's say landscaping would include another kind of, landscaping is not going to be subject to copyright, but a landscaping proposal, for example, or let's say a presentation about company policy. So it just differs. What I can do is I can individually email people some links that they can use to sort of review the kind of permits.
Gotcha. Oh, Nichelle says, yes, definitely do that. And then Kiwi says, what about songs used in the intro to a podcast? Is that just a mechanical, or do you need something else?
That would be just a mechanical one, as long as you're using just a composition and you're not really copying the melody entirely, including the engineered portions. So as long as it's just the composition in the song, it's a mechanical license that you need.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to end this session, and I'll see you guys in the tables or on the tables.